Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Monday. Today, we're going to talk all about USC Trojan football. Of course, like we always do, spring football starts tomorrow, Tuesday, March 6th. We're going to talk to Dan Weber, USCFootball.com beat writer and columnist, all about it. Lots of breaking news to get to. Sort of a news dump, you could say, on this Monday before spring practice. We got roster updates, scholarship chart stuff. New coach has been announced. So we're going to talk about all of that with Dan Weber coming up in a few minutes. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us podcast@uscfootball.com or send us a voicemail or a text at 424-254-9141. That's 424-254-9141. We do love to hear from you, all of your voicemails. We're going to play those today. We got some voicemails, texts, emails. We'll play all that today in a couple of minutes, but I just want to thank, before we jump into it, our sponsor, newest sponsor, 4Hymns. Did you know 66% of men start losing their hair by the age of 35? When you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. 4Hymns.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss. You get medical-grade solutions, real doctors offering well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. These are not herbal supplements. They are prescription solutions backed by science, and they're shipped directly to your door. So you can order now. My listeners, get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for just $5 right now while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4hymns.com/USC. That's 4hymns, HIMS.com/USC. 4hymns/USC. So go check it out. And if you try it, please drop me an email. Let me know how you like it. All right. And as promised, we have Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist for USCFootball.com on the line. And we got to do some breaking news. Dan, some crazy stuff. A news dump in the last minutes before USC spring football. We find out about a new running back coach, and they release the roster, and there are eight people, by my count, that were eligible that are no longer on the roster.
Yeah, that happens to be the exact. I'm looking at the media guide, the download here, and I'm looking and I'm thinking that's the first section you want to go to are the guys that are missing. And you realize, whoa, there are people missing. And, you know, you knew some of them were going to be missing, but you didn't maybe know everybody that was going to be missing. And, you know, we had known Roy Hemsley was going to be gone. And we knew that both Jalen Green and Olajuwon Tucker certainly had it in their plans to graduate, and they had it in their plans probably not to be part of this program. But, again, they still haven't announced that. They're just listed on the chart as people that they've lost. When they start spring, these are people who won't be back. But you're right. You know, the number gets up to eight pretty quickly, and then you realize Nathan Smith has got a medical retirement, and I'm trying to think of all the.
Yeah, I got a list here, so I'll just go through them real quick. So Cole Smith, he had tweeted out a couple weeks ago, I think it was, he was going to retire.
Think about that. Both two offensive linemen in the same class with the name Smith have medical retirements the same spring. I mean, that's kind of, you know, that's like Twilight Zone, kind of weird when you think about it.
Yeah, so those two, and then also Roy Hemsley. He announced this past week he was going to be a grad transfer to ASU. He didn't announce grad transfer. He just said transferring. But according to our sources, he was going to graduate this semester, so he'll be a grad transfer. He'd have 2 years to play too. Grant Moore was a linebacker with 1 year of eligibility remaining. We talked to our sources. He had graduated, and he's moving
on. He was a walk-on who earned a scholarship.
Yeah.
And normally those are scholarship till you graduate, and normally those are for your, you know, your last year.
Yeah.
So that made a lot of sense. I think you could really figure that one out.
But, yeah. And he's going to be working in real estate now. So he graduated. He could have come back for one more year, but he did not. You mentioned Jalen Green. And I think Joey Kaufman of the Orange County Register talked to his high school coach and said he was going to be a grad transfer. Didn't say where. Olajuwon Tucker, you had mentioned. Jamel Cook is another one, cornerback. So just we had heard.
We know he's in school.
Yeah.
And we know he's working out. I mean, the video with, Iman Marshall was pretty impressive. What we're hearing is probably go junior college route next year, and then transfer somewhere else the following year is what it sounds like for Jamel.
And then the other one is Joseph Lewis, of course, had the legal issues. I got a voicemail question. I'm going to play that for you in a second. But with coming out of signing day, we had the scholarship chart. If you go to uscfootball.com, up top there's like three dots. Go to the scholarship distribution chart. We had the total at 90 players because those were the people with eligibility remaining. We thought, you know, there certainly had to be some attrition, at least five. We now know of eight that are no longer on the roster. So that brings the count down to 82. So they're well under the 85 limit now. So no issues there going forward.
Well, and the amazing thing, I think maybe the most amazing thing is all of the scholarship special teams guys are coming back.
Yeah,
so,
that's kind of crazy because you would think that at least
punters,
one or two of them.
Two punters, two place kickers, they're all back. No changes there. See, I would have, if you'd have asked me to handicap it, I'd have said that would have been the first place to start maybe for some attrition. So, you know, what do we know? All the special teams guys are on scholarship or back. So,
yeah. Not that there couldn't be more attrition. There certainly could be. But at this point, those are the eight that we know of. And that's what we've been waiting for. And we kind of feel like this is why USC waited this long to release the roster. I don't remember them ever releasing a roster the day before spring football. Because, people are trying to do their previews and stuff. And if you're a newspaper person that doesn't do this all the time, you kind of need that spring prospectus to do a lot of this stuff. So,
Even if you are, I took a number of educated guesses. Basically, you could not find out who for sure with what, and you had to put if coming or if not coming or whatever. I mean, basically you were guessing and I talked to them about it and they weren't going to release it until the Monday, afternoon before the start of practice on Tuesday.
Yeah. I sent a few texts to see what time they were going to release it. And I was getting afternoon. I'm like, really? Like you're not even going to release this in the morning or anything? Okay.
They had to release the new coach in the morning.
I guess
that was kind of in the morning. And of course, we both, I think GM got it Friday night. I got it Saturday morning. And talking to USC Saturday night at the game, at the UCLA basketball game, it was, there's nothing signed. There's nothing official. Nothing. Well, I mean, come on. When you know everything that had to happen happened. It was as official as it could possibly have been, and they just did not want to. You would have thought, heck, if I'm at USC right now, I might want to introduce the guy at halftime or something, Here's our newest coach from University of Michigan or whatever. But that's really not the way they're going right now.
No. Well, we'll talk about Tim Drevin in a minute, but I wanted to, since we were talking about the roster, we did have a question on Joseph Lewis. He was suspended. What we know is he was suspended from all team activities. He was not on the roster, so the assumption is he's not going to be on the team. But I'm going to play you this voicemail question, and we'll talk about Joseph Lewis a little bit.
JD from D.C. With two questions for Dan this week. Dan, is Joseph Lewis still attending classes, or has he just been suspended from the football team? And second, are you aware of any major college football program that is heading into spring practice in a week that does not have a full complement of assistant coaches? Just asking.
JD, that's a good one. We think he is definitely still attending class. There would just be no reason. I mean, I know there are some issues when these kinds of things happen. If there are people involved in the case that are in the same classroom, where they'll say there has to be separation or you have to stay, you know, away from the person or whatever. And we do believe they're both USC students. So I guess that could be an issue to some extent. We don't know all those details, but they list Joseph as what is the exact title of the little graph? Squadman Lost, 28. And so they have all the 28, of guys who were on the team this year who will not be, who are not here now. And he's listed as a lost squadman. So as far as the assistant coaches, I think if you're not one of the later spring practice teams, I think it can go fairly late. And I think, you know, one of the things we were thinking about, if it was going to be somebody else, is they're still possibly negotiating their contract buyout, if their previous school, and maybe if that hasn't been completely worked out, you don't have the ability to get them in maybe quite as soon as you'd like. And so there can be other, you know, factors involved that you don't have control of. If the guy you really want has still got to do some things, jump through some hoops and things like that before the buyout is settled. I mean, and, you know, it's obvious you might be able to say, well, I don't have another job, and, you know, you get a different buyout. And let's say if they know for sure you've got another job, they maybe would negotiate a little bit tougher with you and all that kind of thing. So, and, you know, just the kinds of expenses that, you know, you might get or you might not get, and they know you're going somewhere else and they're going to move you and do all the other stuff. It puts you maybe in a less favorable negotiating position. So I'm not, and I think Keeley checked last year when exactly they brought Delane and McCullough in, and I think it was just a few days before spring practice. It wasn't much lead time at all. So I don't know that that's a big issue, JD.
Yeah, it was March 3rd last year, so a few days before spring football. But there was like a week or two before that we heard the name, and we, like, Tim Drevno, we didn't really hear till Friday night. And then I think we broke it Saturday morning, like Dan said. It was post-war room kind of thing. And then I think we might have mentioned it in the war room or possibility. But that's the other breaking news. Tim Drevno, he's now back. He's going to coach running backs and be in charge of the run game and pass protection coordinator, which is kind of an interesting title. I haven't heard that one. We had three or four questions already, Dan. So I was going to read these questions for you and then kind of get your thoughts on Tim Drevno. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
All right. So bear with me for a second. I want to get people's thoughts in there. I think there's a lot of good points, so I'll read them off. This is from Troy. Please explain how Tim Drevno is a good hire. He is an offensive line coach, coaching running backs. He's not coaching the offensive line and not coordinating the offense. If he gives too much input to the offensive coordinator or the offensive line coach, he will ruffle feathers. How will he individually get the backs better like the last guy did? I mean, the guy hasn't coached running backs in 20 years. So that's from Troy. Dustin, a little bit different take. Drevno being hired as a running back coach threw me for a loop because he obviously isn't a running back coach. But that being said, I like it for the reasons I'm about to give you. While I'd love to have hired a coach who's been working with backs for the last 20 years, at least it's a position where it's easier for players to get by on raw talent. I think we saw Dylan McCullough really have a positive impact on his ball security drills because he hasn't spent the last 20 years coming up with his own drills for backs. Maybe he'll be more willing to adopt some of the things that DMAC instituted last season. And lastly, I don't think Drevno takes a job if Clay doesn't make it clear to him that he's going to let him have his say shaping the offense. Given how the offense has been the last couple of seasons, I would think that giving Drevno a seat at the table would be fantastic from a philosophical standpoint, if only because he's going to be advocating for a more physical offense and a better running game. If we're going to have a lot of cooks in the kitchen with the offense, I like where we're adding a chef who isn't a quarterback. Am I close to being onto something? So that's Dustin. That's interesting. Then Jim B says, love the show. Do you think that part of the reason why they hired Tim Drevno was to send a message to Neil Callaway that basically you'd better get your act together because we now already have your replacement on staff? Fight on from Jim. And then the last one is from Tom. The new running back coach seems to have extensive experience in different positions. He can be helpful to T and the offensive line coach. Do you think Helton will use him for that, or will he be resented by these coaches? Also, is he a good recruiter or just another body to add to the staff? Thanks, fight on. Tom from the South Bay. So lots of takes there, yeah. Dan, all over the place.
Lots of, I think I'm listening to most of those and saying, yeah, that sounds right for just about all of that.
Yeah, all interesting points, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all of those could be true. I think one of the things that they got to work out, I do like, he's got a 9-word title, okay? I don't think I've ever seen, what is your job here? I am running backs coach / running game and pass protection coordinator. I do like it, though, that that tells me someone watched the Ohio State film and they realized what the problems are. And that they do need a running game and a pass protection coordinator, neither of which they could do against Ohio State. Okay? So you got to like that. As far as the running backs coach part of it, I thought that was an interesting point. And I actually kind of said that myself, was maybe he will just keep DeLand's drills, keep the water footballs and the spring-loaded footballs. But the other part of it that DeLand did so well was he set up the, you know, the turnover garbage cans that basically allowed him to set up the different, you know, the second and third levels and where the cuts had to be. And he got them to make the cuts and got them to visualize where those cuts were going to be. And I think him being a running back himself really helped him do that. That would be, for example, I always thought, I was a high school baseball coach. I was a catcher my whole life, and I went softball, played third, and maybe some first. But I always thought, if you asked me to try to show, and I kind of know baseball pretty well, but if you said, teach that guy how to play center field, I'm not even the least bit going to be able to, you know, you played ball all your life. I'm not going to be able to tell you how to play center field. It's just so different, such a different way. And if you're taking a guy who, and he has, you know, Tim has coached some, you know, running backs a good while ago. That's a different, just seeing it and visualizing it. That's such a different set of skills than what you're doing at the offensive line. Now, if it helps integrate the run game at the point of attack with the run game, with the running backs, that's a great thing. Because as good a job as DeLand did last year, he obviously didn't necessarily have the final say in terms of how they were going to line up, what kind of personnel, are they going to have any real quarterback threat on the option, all of that kind of stuff, which, you know, at the point of attack, very often they were outnumbered by the defense, the offense was. So if they can get that squared away, that's a real plus. Whether the running backs picked up enough last year from, DeLand's drills to be able to kind of get them through this year, I mean, I always thought whoever comes in after him is really going to have a big job to do to win those kids over and to get their confidence and all the things that, DeLand did. I mean, you can't do a better job than he did last year. I mean, it's not possible. So I don't know that we're going to actually see, do they think about bringing in a grad assistant who is a recent, say, running back? That has all that kind of, you know, muscle memory and ability to look at the game as a running back. Maybe you think about it. The other area I think is going to be an issue is with Drevno having more seniority or more authority in terms of the play calling and the design and all that, does that slow things down even more? I don't know. I mean, here's a guy, he was the $1 million coordinator of all in the offense at Michigan. Is he going to be, you know, making suggestions? How is that going to work? And I don't mind if he's the running back, the running game coordinator in terms of this is how we're going to do it. How does that work with your offensive coordinator? I really don't know. And I don't think we knew exactly how it all worked last year. And you have a feeling, well, we'll know when we see it, and we'll know when we think we understand how it's exactly working. We know it didn't work. We know all the things that didn't work last year. The play calling looked like it was too slow, looked like it did not help the rhythm. It looked like it was uncertain. The red zone play calling, the short yardage play calling, certainly didn't look like it, you know, had the answers. You add a stronger run game person to that mix. So basically, there wasn't really a run game person in the mix. You had Tyson Helton and T and Clay, three quarterbacks. It didn't ever sound, because when you ask Coach Callaway some questions about why you do this or why did you do that, he would say, that's a Clay question. That's not that's not for me to answer. And how we're going to get that answer and how it's going to work, I mean, does this give Callaway some help? I'm going to be really interested to see how this works, you know, just in the spring in terms of how they go after things and how physical they get and how they incorporate that into every day's practice. And I'm convinced, you know, as just a high school line coach, but I just think it's hard to get better day after day. It's hard to compete for somebody's spot. If you're an offensive lineman and you're out there in shorts, I just don't see that you can do the things you have to do to get better and to compete for spots. If you're in shorts, I'm just sorry. I don't know that I'd practice them in shorts ever. I mean, that doesn't mean you go full contact. No, you may not go full contact at all. But just the ability to maybe do 5 or 10 minutes worth. And you know, I know people get on us from going back to the Pete Carroll, whatever, you know, era. But they went quick periods. Very quick period. The practices were shorter than today, but they did seem to have the ability to go the ones against ones and really compete. And defensive linemen helped get offensive linemen ready. And I just don't see them being able to do that in shorts. That's just a big no-no for me. And when you see Ohio State come into the Cotton Bowl and go two-hour full pads practices, and USC does one walkthrough in shorts in the same 2 days to start, you just think, this isn't right. This is not getting USC better. So I think Drevno's got a chance. Michigan could run the ball. They had, you know, horrible quarterbacking the last couple of years, but they could run the ball. And that's something, considering you knew they couldn't throw the ball. So give him credit for that. And say, let's you get as much as you can out of this. And we'll go from there. But, I think on balance, you have to say it's a plus higher. And Clay believes it's a steal. I don't know if that means Michigan is still paying a lot of Drevno's contract or all of it. I don't know. But that's probably not a bad thing either. But he was one of four Michigan assistants making $1 million a year or more.
Nice.
It's kind of a different world. And they're never going to beat Ohio State. They're never going to be able to recruit with Ohio State. And they're never going to be able to do the kind of recruiting Ohio State does. And Michigan lives in kind of a dream world. They've got the big stadium and the, you know, great uniforms and the great fight song, and they won more games than anybody in college football history, but they're not going to beat Ohio State. And they're kidding themselves. You can go visit the Pope for spring practice and all that. It ain't going to help you. You got to be able to get, you know, you got to be able to get better players than they get. And I don't see that happening. So I don't think it's a bad thing to get somebody from Michigan. And they had to do something because they're not, they don't have the players that, that they need to win.
What about the, so some people make points about, okay, this is basically putting Neil Callaway on notice. And then, you know, some people have compared it to, if you remember later in the Lane Kiffin era, where offensive line coach James Craig was under a lot of pressure, and we felt that there was pressure from the administration for Lane Kiffin to let him go. And he kind of stubbornly did not, but brought in a second offensive line coach in Mike Summers. Yeah. If there's like a similar like feel to this than that.
Yeah, I think you have some of that feel. I mean, I think a sincere sense of, this is making us better. This guy really gets the run game. We know what happened in the Ohio State game, and we have to get better. And so, you know, if we're spending a little more time, you know, by bringing in another offensive line coach, you know, how that working relationship with Coach Callaway goes, I don't know. You know, we know that when Coach Orgeron brought in the defensive line specialist
Pete Jenkins,
and brought him in, and then USC brought him back to work with Kenichi, who was going into his first year as a, you know, real full time assistant, and that didn't go over so well apparently. Kenichi is, you know, oh, this is my job and I got it, you know, and Pete is like the easiest guy in the world to work with. And I think it took a long time to make that kind of work, those two. And some of it was, you know, it was hard for, you know, Kenichi to have somebody there like that. I don't know how this is going to work with Callaway. I mean, let's face it. Callaway, I still think this is true, has more Southeastern Conference championship rings than anybody living. That's the word, because he's got 10 of them as a player for Bear Bryant and as an offensive coordinator and offensive line coach at Auburn, Georgia, and Alabama. I mean, this isn't some guy, you know, I know it's easy for people to, you know, oh, he came from Western Kentucky. This isn't just a guy from Western Kentucky. I mean, this is a guy who has been to at a lot of good places where they've done a lot of good things, and it's not like he doesn't come in, you know, without, I mean, he was a head coach at University of Alabama, Birmingham. This is not, you know, just some, you know, run of the mill assistant coach. So I don't think we know how that's going to work. I don't think we know at all. We really don't.
All right. So that's kind of the breaking news stuff. I wanted to jump in, get to some of these questions. Before we do, I want to tell you about, this has been a really cool sponsorship for us, Lisa Beds. I love this company. The more I read about them and stuff, they're an innovative direct-to-consumer online mattress brand that's also socially conscious. I love doing volunteer work. I'd like to do more. I should do more. But they do that as part of their mission statement. It's a better place to sleep for everybody. So they'll donate a mattress to a shelter for every 10 they sell through their 1 in 10 program. And they also have all their employees donate 1% of their time to volunteer for local causes. So it's pretty cool. But the really neat part is when you get this, you order a bed, it's just like ordering something online, and it comes to your door in a box that doesn't look like it would have a mattress in it. And when you open it up, it's folded in half, and it's almost like it's freeze dried. It's just compacted in there, compressed, and it opens up and then it becomes a full mattress. So I have a queen, and I've really started, well, I started to sleep on it more recently. I changed the bed up a little bit. It was sitting on a box spring before. These foam mattresses are meant to be on a completely flat platform so that Lisa has a foundation that they'll sell. So I started sleeping on the foundation recently, and it made a lot of difference. So it's just a really great feel, and you can try it for 100 nights risk-free. It's always free shipping, so definitely go check it out. So lisa.com, you go to lisa.com/USC, LEESA.com/USC. You'll get $100 off the mattress for listening to the show. The promo code USC, lisa.com/USC. Definitely try it out and email me and let you know Me putting on a foundation recently has made a world of difference. So it's a really cool bed to sleep on. So I have to check it out. Dan, we're going to have to get you one, man. We're going to have to try this out.
Yeah, it sounds cool. I'm really intrigued by it. I see them advertised, and you see the carton that it comes in and all that, and it looks like, wow, that looks so interesting. It sure looks like a better way to do it than the old way.
Yeah, like this, especially the box springs.
You don't have to have it like all that.
So you get rid of the box spring, and you can put it on a foundation that's higher, and you get more storage under the bed and everything. So it's pretty cool. All right, well, let's jump in. We have I'm going to play this voicemail question for you, Dan. Here we go.
Curtis from Moreno Valley. This is for everybody. Thanks for having Chris Hawkins on. That was a great idea, and asked him some nice questions. Now we know that Coach Helton lets the players tell him how hard they want to go at practice. He doesn't decide not to hit or to go soft or whatever the case may be. He actually asks them how they want to practice. And they tell him if they want to, how hard they want to go at practice. So, what do you guys think about that? It's very interesting.
Curtis, I think you make a really good point. I got a little nervous this year when talking to some of the players, because I really started getting on this, they're not going hard enough. They're not giving them enough chance at every practice to go hard. Again, it doesn't mean you go 2 hours of full pads, take them to the ground, practice, but you have the ability to do that for quick, short bursts, and you really compete with ones against ones. And you would hear guys say, oh, yeah, when it got close to November, they'd show up on Tuesdays hoping not to see pads in their lockers. And that to me was a really bad sign. I don't think you want your players thinking, boy, will they start no pads November a week early? You don't want them thinking those thoughts. You know, I mean, you want them thinking like Ohio State was thinking coming to Dallas when they said you're going 2 hours in full pads on day one before we go to the hotel, and then you're going 2 hours full pads the next day. That's what football is. Again, watching Ohio State, I mean, I really was impacted watching Ohio State's D-line drills right next to where we were standing at the end zone and thinking they're working harder these 7 or 8 minutes than I think I saw USC working, you know, most of December. That's an eye-opener. And again, there are only a few teams that have that kind of personnel, that kind of talent, that kind of physical ability. But when you see that, you realize USC is not there. I mean, we're here now. NFL teams are hitting more and deciding that, you know, it's football. It's got to be comparable. Again, you're not taking guys to the ground, tackling them and all that. But you got to, you know, it's not basketball, and it's not basketball and shoulder pads and helmets. It's football. And so that disturbs me. And it doesn't surprise me even a little bit that the players are vocal. These are players, and this is not their fault. And these are coaches that maybe it's not totally their fault. They came through the era when USC would have 43 originally recruited scholarship players available for a game like the, you know, when they upset Stanford in 2012 with Coach Orgeron, and they played 12 guys on defense. That was a whole different world. And that was, you know, I still remember when Lane figured out, he said, we got to do it like, you know, the NFL, and we got, you know, about the same numbers as the NFL, and we're going to have to do it that way. And they might have had to do it that way for a while. But they don't have to do it that way now. And I don't think it's doing them any favors. It obviously isn't when you watch the, Notre Dame game, the Ohio State game. They just didn't have the firepower. I mean, they didn't have the firepower to slug it out with Texas and Utah, for example. You had Sam do some things, or, you know, you got better players. But, Curtis, that's not a good thing. Coaches should coach. You listen to them, pay attention to them, But boy, you don't want them ever thinking that they have some control over whether you go in pads or not. I mean, they'll tell us, for example, oh, that we're going to practice on this time or at this day. And they say, but don't tell the players, and we don't want them to know. And yet they're asking them, do you want to practice in pads or not? No, you don't ask them that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You just can't. You think Urban Meyer got on the bus when they landed in Dallas and said, what do you want to do, guys? They got a big celebration for us at the hotel, or do you want to go have a 2-hour practice? What do you think? Think he asked that question?
Probably
not. I'm guessing not. And if he did, it wouldn't have mattered what their answer would have been. They were going to go practice.
And if you don't know, Curtis was referring to, I did an interview with Chris Hawkins last week, so you can check that out on peristylepodcast.com. But it was sort of like an exit interview. Chris got snubbed from the NFL Combine, so he'll be practicing at the Pro Day or participating in the Pro Day on March 21st.
Yeah, big Pro Day. The way the USC guys handled the Combine, you're going to get to – well, you guys won't get to see it because the NCAA – said you can't go because the Reggie Bush Pro Day got them all scared, and so they forbade the public from coming. But if you could go there on and maybe you can look through the fence at, you know, Cromwell Field or Loker Stadium, you would get to see Sam throwing the ball, and you would get to see Deontay doing what he does that he didn't do in Indianapolis, and that'll give Sam a friendly, familiar receiver. And and Ronald, hopefully, I don't know if Ronald's got enough time to come back from whatever he did that, you know, kept him from doing the rest of Pro Day. But Pro Day is going to be jam packed with all kinds of interesting stuff, with all that's hanging over the USC guys heading to the NFL.
All right. Well, let's move on. We got a bunch more email questions and some texts. Jimmy in East LA. I don't know if were you born in East LA, Jimmy? That's an old reference. This question for Dan Weber. Dan, in your opinion, what do Trayvon Sidney and Velus Jones have to work on this offseason to earn decent playing time this year? Do you envision them gaining some more targets based on their talent and skills?
I know, you know, Trayvon, he's kind of a smallish kid by far. The trick catch guy, you know, there's nobody in the clubhouse even close. He can make any kind of catch doing, you know, one hand, you know, behind the back, you know, you name it, he can do it. I think he's pretty close, you know, for his size and speed and all that. I mean, I think this is where I'd like to see USC run more plays. I'd like to see them run, you know, instead of slowing the game down, I would like to see him, you know, get to that 80 plays minimum a game and get as many guys on the field as they can. Because when you got more players than the other team, you ought to try to run more plays. But I think Trayvon has gotten to where I think he's ready to go. As far as Velus, you don't know that you can get fast enough to get deep. I think Velus has to work on all the other little subtle things that wide receivers have to do. I think he got the most out of his ability as a kickoff return man because he kind of looks like at times he's looking for a place to fall. And he kind of gets out ahead of his skis, I guess you might say, and he gets a little bit overextended. And at the first touch, he's down. Where you'd like to see him be able to run more, as fast as he's running, but still run more upright and under control so that when he has to, you know, run through that first guy that gets a hand on him or whatever, he doesn't go down. That's kind of what I'd like to see with Velus, that he just work on, you know, staying upright and, doing it full speed and running through contact would be, you know, the thing I think, you know, we need to see from Velus. The same way, you know, that works on the, the wide receiver, reverses and stuff like that. I think that ability to run through first contact, it would really be important for Velus.
It's funny, if you want to bet on who's going to be more efficient, you got to go with Sidney because he gets in the game, he'll get one play and make a catch. and Jones gets in and a whole bunch of plays, or at least multiple plays, and doesn't really do much. So when Sidney gets in there, he seems to be active and doing things. So he'd be the guy to watch, I would think, of those two.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the quarterbacks trust him. They think he'll catch the ball. I think he'll get open. He's got a lot of, you know, he got a lot of savvy. So yeah, I'd like to see him on the field. He's fun to watch. I mean, he does stuff. And Velas, I think, has to, more productive. Just got to, you know, when he's there, you know, not just a decoy. I mean, I think they do use him as decoy because of his speed, and they think people will realize, okay, he's in there for, the deep ball, and they can use him to, pull the defense with him. And so they tend to do that with him. But, I think he's got to earn some where he gets the ball, too.
All right, let's move on. We got a question from Tarek. Do you have confidence Austin Jackson can be an elite left tackle?
I think he's got the potential to be an elite athlete. I think he runs. He's got they got the big frame. He runs easily. He looks like he moves easily. I was disappointed, and this isn't in Austin. I was just disappointed in the entire offensive line that I didn't get the sense that they were any better in December than they were, in August or September, early September. I didn't see that. I mean, I would have liked to have seen the two freshmen, Ender Voice and Austin Jackson, really look like by the end of their freshman year that they were, had a year of experience. And I'm not sure I saw that. I think it's the big challenge for this team is to take these guys and make them no longer look like they're, they just got here. And I don't think we saw that last year. That was a disappointment that we just didn't see anybody in that second group push anybody in the first group. The first group certainly didn't act like they were getting pushed by anybody. I think, again, that's a function of practice. And I think, practice has to, be the kind of, place where if you're not, I love what Pete Carroll always said, that he's got the starting lineup etched in sand, and you're as good as you play today. And I don't think we've seen that. You want to see it where the guys like Austin Jackson says, I can beat that guy out, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to show him. I'm going to beat him out. I think we need to see that. You need to see that kind of an attitude, that kind of a development about what's going on. It was the key element in Pete Carroll's program success, that sense of competing every day and just that sense of I'm going to outcompete you. And they did it on the practice field and they did it in games. They just didn't, they never looked comfortable. That I think is, but they look like they felt like they were going to beat you because they practiced better, they prepared better, they prepared harder. They were never, going to brag about, hey, we don't have any pads in the locker room today or in our lockers today. I mean, I talked to Sean Cody, talked a lot about how he and, whoever he worked against, Sam Baker, I guess, would be the most likely candidate to have worked against him almost all the time. And he talked about, you got two All-Americans, and you got Sam Baker, a three-time All-American, Sean, a couple of times All-American, and how they worked against each other every single day, depending on who they played that week and how that guy was going to play them. And they made one another better. And I want to see that from this team where, you got both sides of that, offense and defensive lines making the other side better and being smart about watching film and saying, okay, I know this is what your guy's going to do to you. So I'll do that. I'll make you work against that all week. I think that's invaluable. And we haven't seen it that kind of work as much. And that's a level of competition and maturity and, toughness that you need to see.
All All right. Let's, Stephen Powie has an interesting one. He said, one thing that's became essentially clear during the 2018 signing period is that we weren't that many seniors on the 2017 football roster. I think there were 13 total scholarship seniors. In other words, the 2017 Trojans were actually a pretty quote unquote young team, at least at the very top, with all the talk now about losing the top three ball handlers on offense, Darnell Jones and Burnett, and three key starters on defense, Green and Wusu and Hawkins. Would you agree that the 2018 Trojans will actually be more mature and experienced on average, and this may more than compensate for the loss of these key starters? What do you think, Stephen Powell?
I think they have a chance to be a different kind of maturity. I think it's got to all happen together, coaches and players. I mean, one of the things that will change that, though, that equation is there really are some good young talent coming in here, offense and defense. I mean, how do you, you know, look at the offense without, you know, factoring in maybe JT Daniels, maybe Amon-Ra? How do you look at the defense without factoring in some of those linebackers and secondary guys? So you may have the presence of those guys, but the team in general, I mean, you look at the defense and you look at everybody back and you think, man, they could have as, you know, as mature a defense as you could possibly hope for, even though you may be building around, you got Porter Gustin, kind of a trade-off for Uchenna Nwosu leaving. Okay, so kind of a trade-off, different kinds of players, different kinds of skill set, but kind of same maturity kind of a thing. Now you're going to have all of those guys that were freshmen last year, you know, Marlon Tuipulotu and Brandon Pilley and Jay Tufele, and they have to play like veterans. If they do, with the depth of the linebacker core and the depth and the size and the, you know, talent and all of that, speed, you name it, of the secondary, they just got to coach them up. I mean, they got to figure out how to get a ton of those guys on the field with the talent that they've got. They got to make it simple enough that those guys can contribute and they're not going to get, you know, have the busted plays, that they're not going to give up 13 plays of 40 yards or more, and get those guys on the field, because they're going to have more of those guys than anybody they're playing. And, you know, you just, I mean, again, I don't think we saw that last year happening enough. Did we see enough of Bubba Bolden and Levi Jones? I don't think so. You know, I think we would have seen a lot of Marlon if he doesn't have a back problem. But I think there has to be a different approach this year to getting, you know, the talent on the field. And whether it's more mature or not more mature, they have to play as if they're more mature. And again, that starts tomorrow with the way, you know, the coaches approach things, because I think they've got the building blocks to be pretty darn good.
We got Chris in Santa Barbara. He said, great show over the last 10 years. Thank you, Chris. I've been thinking about the recent comments from Dan and Coach regarding the lack of physicality in practice and its negative impact on games. My old coaches like Marv Goo, Ray George, and John McKay just wouldn't understand it. Could it be that we have some coaches, Reed head coach, that have been here long enough to remember how practice hitting was minimalized to avoid injuries when we were under sanctions and had fewer players? Maybe a reboot of their thinking is in order. Your thoughts, Chris in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, Chris, I mean, this is the kind of, to some extent, the problem we've got is, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I have seen more really good college football practices than maybe some of the current USC coaches, because I got to see basically, except for the first year, every single USC football practice when Pete was here. So, and Pete didn't allow other college coaches to watch him practice. So you have that picture in your mind, and you know, we saw him. And you saw, too, when Pete's practices started slipping, when they didn't, you know, have the right guys succeeding coaches who left, and that's always the biggest challenge in college football. When you get something going, is how do you replace assistants who are going to get opportunities to go? But yeah, I'm not sure. The combination of the dealing with an NCAA limited scholarship crew and having three straight quarterbacks as head coaches. You know, you had Lane and you had Sark and now Clay. And quarterbacks see the game differently. And I think that's not been a good thing necessarily. Three straight has not been. Because you see the game, you know, differently. And it's more of a chess match and it's more basketball and grass and that kind of thing. And, you know, I think Harbaugh probably is one of the quarterbacks who sees it as a, you know, a tough man game. Unfortunately, he doesn't see it with good quarterbacks. So, it makes life a little more difficult for, you know, Jim when he doesn't have, you know, Andrew Luck as his quarterback. But yeah, I think, Marv Gu would probably have, if they had a coaches meeting now and they were talking about, you know, no pads November, I'm not sure. It would be interesting to see what the expression on Marv Gu's face would be when you use the expression no pads November. Wouldn't you like to be sitting in a meeting with John McKay and Marv Gu and come up with, why don't we go for no pads November and see – and see what would happen to you in that meeting. It wasn't going to happen. And there are a lot of, I mean, it just saying no pads November, honestly, you wouldn't, if you, you know, just, you can't even imagine where that would be. And basically, that was USC's character. If you didn't know much about USC, you knew they had a bunch of big, tough guys who could run over you and knock you down. They had offensive linemen that looked differently. You know, they just didn't look the same as some of the, you know, thicker, maybe slower guys that you saw in the South or in the Midwest. USC had these big athletic looking offensive linemen, and they would, you know, run it, you know, they'd come at you and they would bust you. And they had these running backs who could just absolutely, you know, just run over you and run it and run it and run it and do things that nobody had ever done before. And, you want to probably think that's USC's character. They're always going to be USC's character. They probably need to get back to that. And hopefully, you know, the Drevno hire and the Ohio State video. I mean, I can't even imagine if I was, you know, connected with USC in terms of the preparation for the Cotton Bowl and then to see how it turned out. That would be very hard to handle, and you would think there will be a reaction, and they've got to get a there's got to be a toughness that we haven't seen, a mental toughness and a physical toughness. Let's face it, they've got more talent than they shouldn't lose in the Pac-12. They've got, when you look at, you know, the let's say the last five recruiting classes, that you could say this team's made up of the last five recruiting classes. Yes, he's third, I guess, overall, you know, Alabama and Ohio State in the whole country. And there's no other Pac-12 team that's in the top 10. And if you take five-star recruits, USC has more five-star recruits than the other 11 Pac-12 schools combined. I mean, it should be one of those things where USC said, look, we expect to go to the Rose Bowl as they, you know, that was with Pete. That's going to be our, and whatever happens after that, that's great. But for USC to have to scramble, I mean, and sure, the NCAA sanctions and all that made it really tough. But for USC not to win their first Pac-12 championship till last year is kind of crazy. And that shouldn't be the way. And I know the media guide for the spring football media guide has this unbelievably outsized Pac-12 championship trophy being, you know, brandished about, and that's great, but that really shouldn't be the thing that this team uses as a measuring stick to necessarily say, okay, this was progress, we got better, we won the Pac-12 championship. I don't think that's the case. That just has to be at an absolute minimum. It really does. It's that simple. When you, for example, you look at this team, and one of the keys for next year would be Marlon Tuipulotu, best player in Oregon by far last year. Who is going to be a key for this year? Well, Taylor,
Talanoa Hufanga, yeah.
Hufanga, and best player in Oregon this year. One of the best athletes in the country. If you can recruit, if you can go into Arizona and Oregon and Utah and Washington and get their best players, how can they beat you? They can't. I mean, USC can do something nobody else in the Pac-12 can do. And it's just that simple. And you got to start from there. We're going to be the biggest, toughest, SOBs on the block. And we're going to use that to get ready to whatever else we're going to do. But we're not going to make this out like, beating Utah thanks to a play at the end of a game is a really big deal. No, it's not. You should beat Utah. it's that simple.
Yeah. We got a few more. Vegas Trojan. I was wondering, who is USC's strength coach, and how do you think he is doing? One thing I noticed in our losses to Alabama and Ohio State is how much more muscle those teams have than USC. USC has big bodies, but it doesn't look the same as the dominating teams these days. The biceps and chest and lower bodies look different to me than the teams mentioned. Does USC really take weightlifting seriously? I'm not trying to be funny at all. Even Alabama skinny players were rocked up. I'm just saying. Dan Weber. That's a couple I'm just sayings or just saying yeah. references today. That's Vegas Trojan.
It's almost not fair to compare them to Alabama, but, if you're going to win a national championship, you got to compare yourself to Alabama. Okay, they look different. Yeah, they look different from the people they play in the SEC, even without as much skill, say, as necessarily Georgia had. They still ended up beating them. Say a Georgia looks a little more like USC or an Oklahoma looks a little more like USC. Ohio State, did not have necessarily great skilled offensive people, but they did have, the defensive athletes who did not look like the Bosa kid, 270 pounds. He looked like a fullback. He looked like 230. He was so cut. And so, proportion and all that. I mean, you do see – now, you're picking out the best. I mean, those are the best. I mean, they do the best job. And that would be good to go after them. And I don't want to – USC did it always differently. They did not try when they had the really good teams. They weren't trying to look better than you. They just wanted to play better than you. So they were more, going for core strength and ability to – I still remember Chris Carlisle talking about he went back to Penn State and to do a weightlifting clinic, and he said they had all these guys that could leg press a Volkswagen, and but he said they couldn't play football at that time. This was before Penn State figured some things out, but they had all these squatty body guys that they could really lift weights. And that's not necessarily the answer either. You want them to be able to play football. But this year, USC was pretty overwhelmed, it looked like, by that Notre Dame offensive line. Now, they had two of the maybe best five offensive linemen in the country, and they had a big, strong, running back, and they just came right at them. And USC was not in that game, and they certainly weren't in the Ohio State game in terms of the physical strength the Ohio State defense against. Now, the Ohio State offensive line, I mean, they didn't do much against USC's defensive line. The USC defense held Ohio State to 277 yards and certainly didn't get pushed around. So it wasn't necessarily like an entire team thing, but in specific ways, and some of that might have been, if I'm USC and I look and I see, okay, this is kind of a mismatch, our offensive line against their defensive line, what do we do to counter that? And I didn't get any sense that the USC offense figured out any ways to counter that. So they get down the field, they go for 400 and some yards, 402 yards, and get down the field, get in the red zone, can't score, can't push it in. Because at that point, Ohio State said, we're not giving it to you. You're going to have to take it. And yes, he wasn't tough enough, strong enough, disciplined enough, and smart enough to be able to, you know, to be able to take it. So I don't think it was all strength. I will say this. I think USC's team was pretty well conditioned. I thought they did a pretty good job from what we could see last summer of connecting their conditioning to football-related drills and things like that. So I thought their conditioning was good. I thought their offensive line strength did not look an ability to be explosive. I thought that's the one place that they really fell down, I thought. And it just becomes so obvious when their defensive line whips the heck out of your offensive line. Other than that, I'm not sure I would, you know, make it a complete their team is that much stronger than your team. But where it really mattered, they really were.
We got one from Las Vegas. Marcellus sent us a text. In each of the last 4 years, we've been fortunate to get elite production from our interior defensive linemen. He said 2014, Leonard Williams, 2015, Antoine Woods, 2016, Stevie Tuikolovatu, 2017, Rasheem Green. Do you see any inside defensive linemen reaching that level or having that impact in 2018? Or will it take another year for the young guys to develop? As always, great show. Fight on, Marcellus.
Yeah, Marcel, I think, you know, you got Christian Rector, who's kind of a hybrid, a little bit, a defensive end more, but a hand down on the ground guy. But I think, you know, when you look at the inside, you got the three, Brandon Tilley, and, you know, he's 340 and 6'3", 6'4", who can, you know, kid gunk a basketball with one hand off a, you know, standing start. You got Marlon Tuipulotu, who, you know, the coaches love. He got everything about him. 6'3", a little over 300 pounds, 305 maybe. Great center of gravity, low pad level. Very good heavyweight wrestler. Who I think, you know, can really handle himself if his back comes back from all that, from the surgery. And then Jake Tufele, who we did not get to see really. Maybe become the player that we thought he would, right away. And it's not that easy. He's probably more in the model of the Rasheem Green type of player. But they're all, 300 pounds or bigger. And so I think they've got the potential, that crew right there. I'm not sure what we're going to see with Jacob Lichtenstein. I think he got a really big body and had some, ability, I think, to put on some real good muscle. But I think you build on those three guys, and you've got a real chance. So I think they've got a chance to be pretty stout, up front next year. I think they really do. And you're right. USC's done a really good job of plugging guys in, year after year up there. And I thought they, they finished strong. Against Ohio State, Joshua too, stood in there, and Rasheem, and they got the job done. They gotta get everybody healthy. You gotta get all three of those guys healthy, ready to go, and you gotta push them. And I think they've all got a future, play a long time in football, if they get to where it certainly looks like they have the physical tools and the mental psychological makeup to be those kinds of, that kind of player.
All right. We got two more. We'll get you out of here. Troy, why does it seem this program is lethargic, constantly procrastinating, and is always running let's wait and see speed recruiting? They don't really start getting serious until mid-January when there was an early signing period. Player personnel, they wait until 3 to 4 games to play the best players. Hiring, they wait until the last minute to make hires or make lazy hires. Game performance, they never start fast, and if they do, they never finish anything. Hell, it even took almost 100 years to renovate the Coliseum, and even that is only a half fix. Does Heldner USC have any sense of urgency whatsoever? That's from Troy. Wow, that's an interesting one.
You know, I think if you're USC, it's easy to not feel an urgency. you're in such a, you know, you've got a school that's just, you know, rolling now. You've just completed this $6 billion. I think they were pretty urgent about that $6 billion fundraising campaign that they've extended for three more years and $3 billion in the high, you know, the biggest fundraising campaign in American higher education. Thought they showed a lot of, you know, urgency there. But if you've been able to be successful, kids want to come there, you know, students want to come there, you know, the academics are certainly moved in the right direction. Los Angeles has moved in the right direction. The Figueroa Corridor has moved in the right direction. You've got so much going for you that it's easier maybe to not feel a desperation that there's an urgency. You have to get it done. Because usually, like last year, that was a team that played with almost no urgency at all. Zero urgency. They still end up, you know, winning 11 games. I mean, that's just, it's USC. I mean, and, you know, a lot of the games, you know, weren't that obvious who was going to win right at the end. And then something happened, and USC wins, and everybody said, yeah, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be. So, yeah, I think to this point, that would be the thing you would like to see, you know, Clay Helton develop, that urgency, that sense that the kind of thing that separates Nick Saban and Urban Meyer and Dabo Swinney, those guys, Tom Herman of Texas, we'll see how it works out, but there's an urgency there. We have to get this done. There's a competitive sense of, you know, this is the most important thing in the world, you know, today's practice or this play or whatever, and we're not going to let that opportunity go. You only have so many of those. And, you know, life is pretty good at USC. People get paid, you know, they may not get paid as much as some of the places, but they're not in Tuscaloosa, you know? I mean, and, you know, life is pretty good. And you'd like to see that sense of, I think urgency is the absolute word. And we don't see it probably as much as you'd like to see it. But I think it's going to be the key in Clay Helton and his time at USC is the ability to develop that sense of urgency, that sense of if you need to bump a player in San Francisco's airport and you have to send two coaches from Tuscaloosa to Hawaii and then bring them back through San Francisco so they get there exactly at the moment that that guy happens to just be returning from his recruiting trip to Ann Arbor, just to bump into him in the San Francisco airport, you do it. And you tell those two coaches, this is what you're going to be doing for this weekend. You're going to Hawaii, then you're coming back through San Francisco, and you're going to be there when Najee Harris's plane lands. And he's taking off his big overcoat from being in you know, freezing Ann Arbor. And I think that kind of urgency is probably something that would not hurt at USC. You're never going to have the same kind of urgency. You got to be, if you're at Clemson or Tuscaloosa, even Columbus, you're going to have more urgency. You really are. I mean, if you want to stay there, you're going to have more urgency. And I think that a little dose of that would be really good for USC.
All right, got one last one. Our buddy Dan, USC class of 1962. Thank you for always being straightforward and answering the tough questions about USC in relation to the Pac-12 and the Larry Scott debacle. I agree that it would be great for USC and at least one other school from the Pac-12 to go to the Big Ten West. As for the spring sports and other non-revenue sports, USC right now is in a special conference for those sports because not all Pac-12 schools play all sports for men and women. In fact, USC always has swimming meets against Wisconsin, and they go to a Texas A&M and Arkansas for indoor track and field meets. In the non-revenue sports, it's all about the national championship, so the conference is not as critical. Look at what BYU and Notre Dame have done as independents to keep these programs on top. With the current playoff system for college football, we can't be in a minor conference, period. Fight on. As a 55-year alum, I certainly cherish our conference history, but I also remember that USC has been in the Pacific Coast Conference, AAWU five-team conference, and when the PCC dissolved, the Pac-8, Pac-10, and now Pac-12. Changing conferences is not new. What has been consistent is being in the same league with UCLA, California, Stanford, and Washington. Dan, class of 1962.
Yeah, Dan, I do think, I mean, if I'd be exploring it, here's what I'd do. I would explore the Notre Dame option first, which is Notre Dame said we're going to go independent in football. We'll give you all the rest of our sports. And they chose not to do it to the Midwest. You know, they're right there in the middle of the Big Ten, obviously. And they've had a lot of relationships over the years, although for a lot of years the Big Ten wouldn't play Notre Dame because they were a Catholic school. And Michigan didn't like, you know, when Notre Dame started playing, USC would play Notre Dame and help Notre Dame become Notre Dame, help USC become USC. But at the time, Ohio State and Michigan didn't want to play Notre Dame. They didn't like what Notre Dame represented. And so I think the Notre Dame option, which is, I think even if USC and one other left the Pac-12, I think it would be hard for the Pac-12 to turn them away if you said, but we'll give you all the rest of our sports and all our road games in football. So you'll still, as what Notre Dame does with the ACC. The ACC, they get Notre Dame in basketball and all the other sports. So Notre Dame goes to the tournaments and they split the basketball revenue because they play a full conference basketball schedule, which is much more manageable than doing that in football. And then Notre Dame, you know, goes their independent way in football and has their NBC contract. And they, one of the best things about that, Notre Dame gets to set the game time for all their home games. Imagine that. That, to me, is almost the most attractive thing about going independent or going on your own or whatever is, and I don't know if you could go independent if you have to go, you know, Notre Dame has more control, let's say, of what they do. And what, if you could go independent and do that deal, that would be great. If you went to be part of the Big 12 or the Big 10, if they would divide those conferences east-west, then you don't have that same control of your football schedule. I mean, I really like the option of USC and UCLA, you know, say some relationship with a Fox and take over an entire Fox channel and basically determine when you play all your home games and things like that. And offer yourself to one of those other conferences to you know, for your other sports. Although, as you say, like water polo and you know, lacrosse and those sports, you're not playing in the Pac-12. Again, I don't think the Pac-12 would turn them away. But if they did, there are so many teams that play, say, top level baseball, that wouldn't be a problem. And would it be a big problem if the USC women's basketball team was in the, you know, the Mountain West or the WAC or whatever? You know, I don't know that would change things, you know, greatly. But it's just something I think they ought to be exploring and exploring thoroughly. And right now, I think that the word ought to be out that USC is looking. I mean, every time we hear something about the Pac-12, it just enrages you. I mean, it's dumb and dumber, and they get, you know, they don't seem to learn from anything. And you know, they're you know, it's a great deal if you're at the Pac-12 because you can make every mistake in the book, and they give you raises and long-term contracts, and life is good. And except for the people in the Pac-12, now, life isn't so good. You get bad schedules, bad starting times, and very little money compared to everybody else in the country. It's a disaster, and nobody calls them on it. It's amazing. It's, you know, you guys, the average reader on the P understands probably 100 times better than the average president in the Pac-12 what the problems are. That's scary. I mean, then maybe the commissioner, who didn't realize that playing a 12-game schedule last year for USC with no bye and getting stuck with the third straight year in a row with a Friday night road game following a road game the week before was a problem. He honest to God, I heard him when he said it. I don't think he realized it. I don't think he had a clue.
No.
It's just, it's like, I try to think of what would be comparable. And I say, here, Larry, here's something you might understand. Let's say you're running the Palm Springs, the tennis tournament out in Palm Springs or wherever the hell it is. And you tell Serena Williams, Serena, we're going to play you in the daytime under the hot sun every single day when there are no crowds and you won't get big national TV. How do you like that? You think that would be good for you, Serena? And they say, gee, Serena's not coming back to my tennis tournament next year. And that's what they do in football in the Pac-12. And it's like, you know, I mean, Larry would understand that if Serena's playing in his tennis tournament, she probably gets to play center court under the lights and doesn't get bad schedules, you know, where you schedule them, you know, or schedule them, you know, under the lights, and then you got it the first match the next day. No, you don't do that. But honest to gosh, I don't think he understood that. And I think people tried to explain to him, well, that's what they're doing in the SEC, and that's what they're doing in the Big Ten, and that's what they're doing in the Big 12. Why shouldn't USC be doing it? Or why shouldn't the Pac-12 be doing it? It just didn't register. It's unbelievable to me that the Pac-12 has existed the way it has, paying people more money than they get in any other conference, and they have no clue what they're doing.
Yeah,
I mean, no clue. I mean, zero.
Baffling.
It's beyond. You can't make it up. You can't believe that he didn't know that. So now they said, oh, we'll turn it over to the computer company that we have do our schedule. They don't even do their own schedule. They said, oh, we won't let them do that anymore. So sure enough, after telling you they couldn't change the schedule, now they've got a schedule with no teams have 12 straight games, and no teams have to play a road game on Friday night after a road game the week before. It was just like that. That's all they had to do was program it into their computer. They had never thought about it. They never figured that out, that wasn't a good thing to put guys, kids on the road two straight weeks with a short week the second week when they've got to travel. They never thought about it.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times on the P, how many times has that thing been discussed in the last 5-6 years? 100? 200? 300? And they didn't talk about it. It's amazing.
It is amazing. I mean, all right, Dan. Well, we'll let you go. We gotta go to practice tomorrow. We gotta get ready.
How about that? I know. Yeah.
So you probably listen to this on Tuesday. This is we're recording this. Now it's later evening on Monday, but
yeah.
Yeah, great stuff. We'll see you out there at practice tomorrow. Looking forward to it.
Can't wait. Okay, should be fun.
All right. Okay, that's Dan Weber. Make sure you check out all the stuff on USCFootball.com. Check out the site because we're going to be putting up a ton of content. We'll have five of us out there cranking out all kinds of stuff. So make sure you check it out. We'll have photos, videos, stories, interviews, analysis, everything coming up here on USCFootball.com. So check it out. Spring ball starts March 6th. So we'll be there. Hope you guys are along for the ride. And it's open. If you want to come down, you can check it out too if you happen to be around USC. So 3:15 p.m. on Tuesday and Thursday this week, then 10 a.m. on Saturday. All right, that's Dan Weber. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.